Yumi is going to be talking about isolation is the dream killer. I'm really looking forward to this. What is the science behind the slogan? He's finally going to give us something that's maybe less touchy-feely than what we've been talking about today. Yumi is particularly close to my heart because she also comes from Toronto, like I do, which, of course, meant we had to meet in Toronto. We had to meet in Frankfurt in a barbershare coaching seminar to get to know each other. She's a coach and counselor based in Amsterdam in the Netherlands. She uses tools and insights from training with Barbara Scher, as well as other coaching methodologies to work with individuals dealing with change, personal development. So topics like navigating transitions at work or a life stage, cross-cultural settings, and exploring meaning and purpose. So sorry to have taken an extra minute out of your time, Yumi, but we'll push it towards the back into the break and please take over.
All right. Hello. Thank you for the introduction. So this presentation is going to be a quick romp through the science of connection and how it can set us up for success. And a quick caveat as I begin, I am not a scientist. The bits of research I'm presenting is part of a more nuanced and complex field, and I'm just skimming the surface in the allotted time. So scatter. Yeah, very much scatter. If you're interested in digging deeper into the research, I can provide a list of my references later. So I was a student at the University of Toronto in the mid-90s when my roommate brought home a book from the library called I Could Do Anything If I Only Knew What It Was. And the title grabbed me right away. At the time, I was feeling quite anxious about my prospects. And in chapter 6 of the book, Barbara Scher described this character type called scanners, and I felt instantly seen. It let me relax about my future and appreciate my many interests instead of feeling cursed by them. By about 2013 or so, I was living with my husband in Amsterdam, and I was able to enroll in Barbara's coaching training in nearby Frankfurt. And there I discovered how coaching was this perfect blend of my favorite things, continuous learning of many subjects, using my creativity and empathy, and helping people one-on-one. And I've trained in other methodologies since, but I will always be inspired by Barbara's original style and her endless curiosity. And she is still an inspiration in developing my own coaching practice. Barbara offered so many insights in her lifetime, and today I'll be speaking about one of the topics that is really, I think, important in our culture right now. So, isolation is the dream killer. What did Barbara mean? I'm assuming that most of you have seen Barbara's TED Talk with the title, Isolation is the Dream Killer, Not Your Attitude. In the talk, she tells some famous stories about Ronnie in New York and the accountant who became a cowboy, as has been mentioned previously. Her message there was that isolation, not your attitude, is the ultimate obstacle to achieving your dreams. And I have to admit, I'd always found that slogan a little cryptic, like dream killer. It was a bit dramatic, right? It's like the last words uttered from a dying witness at a crime scene, you know. But I think her choice of words were dramatic and attention grabbing on purpose. Because we've heard from some of our presenters why dreams are so important. But what's the big deal about isolation, right? In my own life, growing up in Toronto, it was the era of DIY, and I prided myself on gaining autonomy and independence at every turn. So I was kind of curious about her idea, but I have to admit it didn't grab me for a while. But I think Barbara knew she was speaking specifically to people for which this doesn't come naturally, hence the urgency in her message. So we know Barbara was a prolific researcher. She applied her many, many interests in social sciences, history, evolution, animal behavior, and plus her direct observations of her clients and built intuitively from her combined interests. But in the time since she's published her major works, the scientific research of the last few decades has revealed some evidence that aligns quite well with Barbara's thinking, and it's reflected in the direction of the mainstream psychology and coaching. Yeah. So the basic premise that her work and the science stands on is that we are social animals trying to stay alive. Here we are, these human beings living in modern societies and living complicated lives in this complicated time in history. And as such, we have a strong tendency to be wrapped up in our own stories and in our heads quite often. But it helps to remember that our preoccupations take place in a brain, and the brain resides in a body, and our bodies are part of a species alongside other living organisms on this planet. And as living organisms, we share one overriding hard-coded instruction based on hundreds of generations before us. By whatever means, stay alive and keep your genes going. And one of the strongest strategies of staying alive has been group formation. And groups increased our odds for survival, and being alone reduced them. In the wild, it doesn't take much to become someone else's lunch. You know, of course, this is not unique to humans. A lot of other animals on the food chain rely on this strategy. But as a human species, our strongest adaptation has been from our super growth of our brains. The human brain is 2% of the body mass, but uses 20% of our caloric energy. So after finding calories consistently was a serious ordeal for us for thousands of years. So although the brain is a very expensive part of the body to run, we've used it to devise countless creative and complex ways to find those calories and spend them. And thanks to these adaptations, we've successfully kept our genes going. So even as our modern lifestyle has our brains preoccupied with groceries, bills, and conference calls, the body has never forgotten its mission. So staying alive starts with staying safe. And the autonomic nervous system is the body's personal surveillance system. It's an ancient network that extends between our brainstem to the organs and throughout the body. And the autonomic nervous system's goal is to protect us by searching for cues of safety and risk. It's actually checking 8 times per second to sense what is happening in and around us. It's constantly scanning the horizon, asking the question, is this safe? So studies have also found that our nervous system also relies on co-regulation, which means it is shaped and regulated through interactions with others. And because our species finds safety in numbers, that also means our species finds danger in isolation. When we're isolated, that means nobody's watching our back. And our body responds by boosting our surveillance system and preparing to protect itself. And this is also the stress response. Whether a threat is real or imagined, physical or psychological, stress releases the same biological responses as if we're about to be eaten by a predator. So our heart rate goes up, our blood pressure goes up, the hormones adrenaline and cortisone transform our whole inner organism, and our body temporarily prioritizes blood flow to the large muscle groups, that's like the arms and the legs, and it prepares the body for instant survival responses like fight, flight, and freeze. At the same time, it deprioritizes all non-emergency functions of the body. And these include growth, reproduction, digestion, resistance to disease, and parts of the brain used in deliberate thinking. Now, this is a life-saving response in the short term. It's designed to shift back into neutral when the threat's over. But when stressful states like isolation are chronic, our nervous system tends to keep the pedal stuck in protection mode. It means our system is deprioritized, some of the capacity for thinking, planning, and even play. And in the long term, studies show it can lead to cognitive, perceptual, and emotional impairments. So in biological terms, you can even say that isolation is a buzz killer. And it doesn't mean that we can't experience any creativity, joy, or inspiration, but it just means that in isolation, it makes it that much harder to thrive when your body is so preoccupied with surviving. Yeah, but we also know it's complicated, right? Because you might say, well, that's interesting and all, but what about my nerves when meeting new people? Like, why isn't it instinctive to just find groups, right? And, you know, be happy. Well, let's be clear, social connection is not all roses. We're constantly choosing between independent action and social cohesion. And our brains start learning out of experience from very early on what is safe and what's dangerous before language or logic have completely developed, and while we're quite powerless as kids. And that's why so many of our fears seem irrational and yet so powerful. Our brains evolved to rely on what it's already learned, and our brain circuits tend to be poor predictors of new rewards. And that's why old patterns feel natural and easy, and then new things feel difficult or wrong or even dangerous. So yes, it is complicated. But to this, I think Barbara would be saying, don't let your old fears have the last word. So these days, there are a lot of studies like, with mindfulness, yoga, breathing, and somatic techniques as ways to calm stress and rebalance ourselves. And these seem to work like kind of in a backwards engineering way to get the body to signal safety cues to the brain and deactivate some of that emergency survival mode. And these are proven to be effective, but with all these practices, if done in isolation, there's still this problem of motivation, right? Like, no matter how beneficial they are, we do struggle to stick with them. So then just hang around people and your problems are solved, right? Well, no. Of course, we can't, you know, work on our dreams just by sitting in a busy bar or being around other bodies, you know. It's important to do social connection in specific ways that promote safety while allowing us to take risks. And Barbara had this balance figured out. I think her methodologies are these intuitive hacks that work around and work with these survival systems. They say the only constant is change, and that goes for our brains too. We just don't notice it. It's a feature called neuroplasticity, and research shows in cases where old brain pathways are destroyed, new ones can develop and take over. And our brains are uniquely wired by our past experiences. And to rewire, we need to feed our brain new experiences in small bites over and over. So repeating the good stuff allows us to make healthier predictions about social connection. So though we can't change or control our past, we can choose how we respond and rewire our brains with new experiences that benefit us. And the benefit of social connection, of course, it allows us to feel safe enough to take the risks of living. So when it comes to social connection, context matters. The ideal conditions of social connections are ones that have clear agreements around mutual respect, support, and openness. So success teams, blockbusters, and idea parties are structured with exactly this kind of intention. They all start with the fundamental rule that all dreams must be respected. In fact, one of the most effective ways of lowering threat is asking a person about their dreams and personal vision. An fMRI study showed that spending 30 minutes in conversation about a person's vision or dream activates regions of the brain associated with imagination and awakens the parasympathetic nervous system, which triggers emotions such as joy, awe, gratitude, and curiosity. And the experience of receiving support from a group can trigger oxytocin, the hormone associated with feelings of love and belonging. Oxytocin creates this good feeling of social trust, which lowers the stress and increases a sense of safety. And by the way, oxytocin levels fall when we are isolated. Then there's the experience of giving support to people in groups, which we get to do as part of success teams, idea parties, or blockbusters. Helping others in need gives us a sense of social importance, which releases the hormone serotonin. So working together also taps into a socially motivated part of our brain that gives us stamina and perseverance. Dopamine is the reward and motivation hormone. And as we work towards our dream alongside others, the brain activates this hormone, boosting our accountability. So what's interesting about these feel-good hormones is that they are not meant to last. As soon as a need is met, our bodies metabolize the hormone so that we go to seek out more. So our brains evolved to promote survival, not just to be happy for no reason. So when our dopamine stops, it's not a crisis. It's just a neutral space for which we can survey our options. So again, Barbara had it right. Attitude is not key to realizing dreams, because on a neurochemical level, we see that happiness is literally fleeting, but it's the things we do and how we do them that keeps those happy hormones squirting with each step we take towards our dreams. And one thing to mention while we're talking about dreams is that I have not found research that specifically supports the value of our dreams. However, there is reason to believe that they hold significance. From infancy, the human brain begins with an abundance of connective networks. And with each sensation and experience, we're paving a specific network path. And the more we use a path, the stronger and quicker it gets. And the connections that we don't use are constantly being pruned away by the brain for maximum efficiency. So if dreams and the memories, talents, and feelings around them had no utility, they would have been pruned out or metabolized out of our system. But years later, even when we never speak of them, our dreams are still with us. And this suggests that our dreams hold some vital key to our survival. To conclude, as Barbara would say, you owe it to your species to follow your dream. So when we do it together, we do more than just survive. We can transform what it means to be alive. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Yumi. That was interesting to find out what we've really been doing the whole time from the point of view. Does anybody have any questions first before I comment?
Thank you. Yeah, I've always kind of been fascinated by where she gets all of her information, right? And then it just happens to be that when you look at it from the developments over the last few years, like they kind of plot themselves along quite nicely to what Barbara was telling us all along. So thank you.
It was very interesting. Thank you. Is there anything you want to say to close up?
No, not in particular. But indeed, like, as I mentioned, you know, if there's any, you know, like the benefits of social connection are just so obvious that, but to do them right, like to have the right conditions is also a part of it. And that's why it's so genius that Barbara came up with these specific kinds of structures that like we're literally stimulating these things, these states in ourselves. So definitely I encourage, you know, if you want to make some dreams happen, to join, you know, either, you know, to do any one of those kind of group formations that Barbara created.
Ah, thank you for recommending them. Yes, Natasha.
I just wanted to also say a special thank you. I mean, that was so amazing to have it all explained in such a like understandable way, because we all know that Barbara did things intuitively and that she just knew these things from experience, and to have it like have the solid background and facts behind it and why this happens and why it's good for us, it's just really an eye-opener. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.